Morning, welcome to our meeting, 9 a.m. on January 20th, 2026, and time to convene a regular meeting for the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. Joining me today are Commissioner Julieta Altamont Crosby, our Vice President, Commissioner Tony Olson, our Secretary, John Harlow, our CEO General Manager, Colin Willenbrock, our Chief Operating and Legal Officer, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, and Ward Stolzner, Deputy Clerk of the Board. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or the electronic devices at this time. At this time, I'm going to say the flag salute and please move our leave. Pledge allegiance to the flag. The States of America, the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible. With liberty and justice for all. Copies of the agenda are located on the clerk's table near the entrance. Commissioners, are there any items to be added or changes to any of the published agenda? Comments from the public is item one on the agenda, and that's when the board will hear comments for items that are not listed on the agenda. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. The person shall be recognized to speak. Sign up cards located on the deputy clerk's table near the entrance. Joining by Zoom, click raise hand or dial star 9 if by phone. Call on you to speak at the appropriate time. If you are on a phone and you call in, you'll need to dial star 6 to unmute. This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, please step up to the podium, use the microphone, and spell your name and the state where you're from. Please remain at the podium while you speak and address the commissioners and not the audience. If you have documents or other material that are into the record, please hand them to the deputy clerk near the door who will distribute them to the board. We appreciate your cooperation with our procedures. Please note that all motions receive an automatic silent second from the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to the floor for discussion. First up, we have items one, comments from the public. Are there any comments from the public on item not on today's agenda? Please raise your hand. Seeing no hands raised online or in the room. On item two, our consent agenda. 2A, approval of the minutes of the regular meeting of January 6, 2026. 2B, bid awards, professional service contracts, amendment. 2D, consideration of certification slash ratification and approval of district checks and vouchers. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Are there any comments from the public regarding the consent agenda? Please raise your hand.
I have no questions.
Hands up. Any questions?
No. Okay. I have no questions.
I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Next, item three, our CEO General Manager briefing and study session. This item is for the board and our General Manager to discuss issues of ourselves with community staff. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Commissioners. We have a couple items to discuss. The first one will be an update, a legislative update, and Ryan Collins. Good
morning, Ryan. Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, I'm Ryan Collins, the District State Government Relations External Affairs Specialist 3.
There we go.
This is the first key legislation update that I'm going to be able to provide you guys this year. The goal is simple, keep you informed on the bills that matter most to the district and communities that we serve. Just on the outset, since it's been a year since I presented this report, I wanted to remind you on how we determine which bills are included on the key legislation report for the 2026 season. Every bill you see here has been identified as either a high impact to the district, on a trajectory to potential passage, or likely to be discussed in the communities that you serve, as it pertains to our industry specifically. We also analyze each bill through the lens of five guiding principles that have been approved by the board. And as a quick reminder for you, those are reliability of service, affordability, community safety, local control, and environmental stewardship. You'll receive a report at every commission meeting, but these reports will be dynamic. Bills are added as they become more important, and others will drop off as they are no longer under consideration or have changed to be less impactful. During my presentation, I'll provide information on new bills added to the list, then focus on the significant updates that have been included since the last report. This approach is hopefully designed to keep your time focused on the things that matter most. That said, as always, if there are ways that we can improve this presentation or report, I am always open to feedback. Getting into the details. So the first week of the legislative session is now behind us, and with only 51 days left, time is already feeling a little bit tight. Approximately 2,000 bills from last session, from the 2025 session, are eligible for further consideration this year, and already more than 1,000 bills have been introduced since the start of this session. Of those bills, we are tracking and reviewing approximately 150 that may be important to us. And for your guys' consideration, this report contains three of those bills that have risen to that level of key legislation. The first is SB 6008, which would establish a residential battery grant program under the Department of Commerce. HB 2275, which would create a new state wildfire fund funded by utilities for wildfire damages. And then finally, SB 6050 and its House counterpart, HB 2268, which would authorize the use of balcony solar and meter-mounted devices in the utility service area. As I mentioned, this list will expand, will likely expand in the next report as the legislature has kicked off in full earnest. So let's just jump into the details here. First is SB 6008, which would establish a residential battery incentive program under the Department of Commerce and would require large utilities defined as having over 100,000 customers to implement a flexible demand program by the year's end. Utilities would apply for grants through the Department of Commerce to fund one-time payments to customers who install residential batteries and are enrolled in the utility's flexible demand program. While the mandate imposes demand response programs on the PUD, the concepts defined under a flexible demand program within the bill could improve reliability by reducing peak load. As you are aware, the PUD is already developing similar programs and planning to scale demand response to 25 megawatts by 2030. So we're largely aligned with the bill's intent. Finally, state incentives could make battery storage more affordable, tipping the economics towards further adoption. As you've heard from our power supply team's presentations on our integrated resource plan, battery storage is close to being cost effective, and this state incentive could tip the scales a little bit more. We are currently engaged with the sponsor with the hopes of removing the mandate and instead shifting this to an optional program that utilities could choose to participate in. And as for visibility, any bill has the opportunity this year to advance in Olympia. However, this one specifically does carry a cost to the state since it is an incentive program that they'd be paying for. And given the budget challenges that I'm sure you've heard about, this will be scrutinized in a little bit more in a deeper fashion.
Is this this work with the net as the net metering rates? Is that how this?
So the bill does include, does touch upon some of the net metering components of the statute. The compensation model would be retail rate in terms of this, but it is demand response. So what that rate would be is flexible based on when that would be discharged. It's an ongoing conversation we're having with the sponsors as well.
But the rates would be set by the utilities.
Correct, yes.
I have a few questions about this. I mean, I know that that's just a start and they just presented and they are on the review and all that, but at the high level, what will this bill mean to Snohomish County PD? And if it's anything, what is going to happen, I mean, with our customers' notice and all that kind of stuff, and also how this proposal align with our current affordability and customer assistance efforts?
Yes, yeah, so the bill as it's currently drafted would make battery storage for those customers who are interested in installing this more affordable. Depending upon how many customers take advantage of this, it adds additional capacity to the utilities grid, which again can help lower our reliability concerns and other issues that, again, it makes our grid more stable and reliable. And so by and large, the intent of the bill is very aligned with what we're trying to accomplish in ensuring that prices stay low, particularly if there's enough of these out there during storm season, You're talking about outages being less of an issue for a lot of our customers, which I think would be beneficial. It doesn't really touch upon assistance to our customers. Again, it would make folks who are interested in establishing these batteries at their house more affordable. And for lower incomes, there is a higher threshold for what they would receive. So again, there is a equity focus on it as well.
Is anything that's going to impact also in our staff to increase or capacity or something like that?
This PUD staff is still reviewing this bill, but as so far, no.
You mentioned outages. Do these battery systems have to be islanded then?
They do not have to be islanded. They would be interconnected to be part of a flexible demand program, depending upon, we are working with the sponsor specifically to kind of iron out some of the details on what that is, but they would have to be interconnected to the grid. Oof.
I'm sorry, only for clarification. So if this bill passes, it won't increase any cost for us.
I don't fully know in terms of like the details on what that would look like, but the goal is to not add any cost to the utility.
Well, it's not going to be it's not mandatory.
It currently is.
Oh,
The
yes.
flexible demand program part of it is mandatory. It is one of the things that we are working with the sponsor on trying
It would
to
be hard.
get.
Thank you.
Next is HB 2275, which will create a wildfire prevention and protection fund funded by utilities aimed at reimbursing eligible claims for wildfire damages. As currently drafted, the bill requires investor-owned utilities to participate in the fund, while consumer-owned utilities can opt in. As such, there are no immediate impacts on PUD. However, this bill does set a precedent for how utilities compensate third-party damages after a fire, which is why we submitted comments to the sponsor indicating that the current draft falls short of delivering a comprehensive, equitable framework to protecting ratepayers. In our comments, we indicated that a well-designed wildfire fund could serve as a meaningful component of the overall approach to addressing wildfire risks and impacts. However, we have concerns with the current draft because several elements of the proposal could act as a disincentive for public power to participate. Moreover, this legislation only addresses one piece of the puzzle. For a more comprehensive approach to succeed, we believe a framework should include clear standards of care for utilities tied to our wildfire mitigation fund or wildfire mitigation plans, independent expert-based plan approval processes and legal protections included, as well as investment in long-term resilience, including establishing wildfire mitigation and suppression funds through the Department of Natural Resources. The bill is scheduled for a hearing tomorrow morning, and we are planning on submitting our written comments there as well. Finally is,
Where are the IOUs on that?
You could probably imagine they're not particularly happy.
Mean, it doesn't really change their cost.
It doesn't change the cost. To us, we are looking at it as what's the value of a fund like this? And if you're thinking about putting a dollar into a fund like this as opposed to other suppression efforts, the value is on suppression efforts. So yes, the IOUs are.
It'll impact their customer rates.
It'll impact customer rates.
Yeah.
The other aspect of the bill is it could be swept by the legislature. So any funds that ultimately end up in this new fund could be directed to the general fund for the legislature. If they're in bad budget year like they are this year, there are some concerns. There are concerns.
I guess it helps if a utility were to go bankrupt or something. So,
There are again
other than that,
the idea of a reinsurance fund, again, conceptually is a good idea, but the details matter.
yeah. Thank you.
And well, good questions. Thank you. So I see this concern. So what are the concerns?
Again, the concerns, there's two provisions in there right now. One is a retroactive provision within the fund that would include specific fires that have happened since 2021. From our perspective, if you were to add funds to this, it's going to go immediately to a fire that we had no involvement in. So that's one of our concerns. The other aspect is it's wildfire is a complex and big issue, and this is not addressing the larger context that we think is an important aspect to also focus on.
And if this pass is going to align with the programs that we have in place or all the public utilities they have in place already to respond to this emergency.
So we have wildfire mitigation plans that are in place. This bill wouldn't impact public power because it's an opt-in. So we are not mandated to participate in any of this. So we wouldn't have to change any current operations related to our how we would manage an active fire. I think the other aspect is that the legislature has recently cut state funding for wildfire mitigation and suppression. And that's, we're again looking at low-hanging fruit. That's where we would want to point our collective officials.
They're looking at customers of all utilities.
They're only, so right now, again, it's only IOU customers who would have to go into this. But again, we're closely following.
One size fits all is, of course, the best.
I would agree.
Solution.
Would agree. All right. Last but not least is HB 6050 and its House counterpart as HB 2296, which would allow customers to use plug-in solar devices under a certain voltage without utility approval or interconnection agreements. We strongly support customer choice, but want to ensure that these devices comply with national safety standards, don't interfere with our grid reliability, and align with infrastructure plans like our advanced meter rollout, which would enable demand response programs and other grid modernization efforts that we would take advantage of with the other bill. We've shared with the sponsors that much of the operational concerns that this proposal arises could be addressed through our interconnection process, and are working towards a solution that allows customers to adopt these devices at minimal cost while protecting the grid. Our goal is to get to yes on this proposal, but we need to ensure that these devices meet safety standards for both the customer, our employees, and do not overload circuits on compromised grid reliability. This bill had a public hearing last week, is going to likely be moved out of the hearing, the policy committee later this week. Senator Leas is the sponsor, and so we are working closely with him on some of those edits.
So it says plug-in. These plug-in to outlets?
They do. They plug into your typical 120-volt outlet.
And how do they prevent backfeeding?
That is one of the main concerns that has been arisen by particularly IBEW and the Department of Labor and Industry. There are no current safety standards within the National Electric Code for these devices. That's one of the things that we're continuing to point to, that without that standard, these devices are, again, we want to ensure that they meet safety standards.
It's also just interesting, you know, electric, I mean, you think of house firing, right? You're energizing the circuit from the panel. Now you could be energizing the circuit from the panel and potentially from another part. You might overload, I don't know. I'm surprised these things exist.
Elle and I pointed that specific component out of, this is an, they call it an outlet for a reason. There are things called inlets. And so these are taking, there's an adoption within Europe and other states. And so this is why the Washington is interested in potentially expanding this. But again, we want to make sure that they are safe. They aren't going to compromise our grid or our employees, as they are live wires.
Thank you.
Of course. So those are the highlights for the week. We'll continue to monitor these bills. Oh, sorry.
Just a general question. Have you seen anything, or do you anticipate seeing anything on large load? And I was reading PJM and the federal government, and I wasn't sure how that one might apply to the Bonneville.
You're actually going to take my next talking point is that I'm actually going to be back next week. There's been a number of bills that have been introduced that will rise to the key legislation, one being about large loads. So I will be back up here at next commission meeting to specifically talk about that bill, as well as a couple others that I think you'll be wanting to know more about.
And if we have more questions or concerns, can we email?
Absolutely.
To you?
Yes, please do. Any follow-up or anything else, please let me know.
Okay.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ryan. Excellent job as usual. Next up is the surplus and sale of an easement. And that is Maureen Barnes. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning. I'm Maureen Barnes, Manager of Real Estate Services. And today I've got a presentation for the surplus and sale of a portion of district property for an easement. So the purpose of the presentation is in to inform all of you of a request to declare surplus a portion of fee-owned right-of-way land, which is located at 18225 8th Place West, Linwood, surplus, and then allow us to sell for an easement. I'd like to answer any questions regarding the transaction, and the easement will be brought back to commission for a public hearing and vote by resolution at the February 3rd, 2026 commission meeting. So a little bit of background on this. The Tolleson family has owned this property for approximately 40 years. It is adjacent to our fee-owned Swamp Creek to Clearview Transmission right away. They've worked with various departments throughout the years seeking approval to do some paving and other improvements on district property, and did seek and get permission, though nothing was actually written down except emails. In 2026, when the district started the limited use permit program that was going to rectify a number of these encroachments, contact was made, and it was agreed at that time, which was, I think it was in 2016, that we would proceed with segregating that portion and selling it to the Tollefsons. That isn't something that we feel is needed to be done or that we want to do. So our goal now is to just try to finalize this agreement, reduce the footprint of the area that they had previously been allowed to move to utilize, and just include basically the paving and the landscaping that they have done. And if you look here at the pictures, you can see our right of way. And it is difficult. I should have had a blown up picture, and I apologize, that kind of showed some fencing and other and a retaining pond that were here that is a little bit under our transmission lines. This pushes them way back so that they won't be encroaching really onto our property whatsoever. So the proposed easement is approximately 18 feet wide at the largest point. It consists of 1,500 square feet. We did an in-house appraisal by staff and determined the value at $6,500. The Tollefsons will not expand or alter what is already existing within this easement area. And also the fencing and pond area will be removed, and it will improve the access and safety along our right of way. So next steps and facts. No district equipment, facilities, or access will be impacted. District staff has reviewed and approved this request. The district retains its right to utilize the easement area as needed. And we will be back on the 3rd of February to hold a public hearing and allow you to vote on this resolution. And I'd like to answer any questions.
I have no question.
Only for clarification, how much is the value?
$6,500.
Thank you.
I've had a couple of questions.
Okay.
So if we need to use that easement area in the future and we damage something, are we responsible to repair it? If we need to put a truck on some asphalt, right? I'm not sure what's there. And anything gets damaged.
That is a very good question. The way it is written is that they completely indemnify us. So I imagine just because of the way that we work, we would actually try to repair that,
Okay.
but it wouldn't be mandatory.
Okay. And then I noticed this easement starts at their lot in the north, but it goes farther south.
It does, and it's really deceptive. So what's going on with that is to the south of them, JM1 Holdings is putting in a subdivision called Westwood Estates. And when they actually looked at it, it is showing up the boundary line incorrectly on the GIS. And they're in the process of working with getting their permitting for their subdivision. And that is where the line will be for the
Okay.
Tollefsons.
Okay. And do we, going forward, are we, would we grant an easement now if there wasn't an encroachment already?
No,
Okay.
this is a unique case, and I just want to say this isn't generally how we rectify these. Unfortunately, this one was one that just kept kind of slipping through the cracks, and this we feel is the very best way to proceed.
Questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good questions. Thank you, Murray.
Thanks.
So really quick, I want to just take a couple minutes. Tony, you had, or Commissioner Olson, you had asked a question or started to ask a question regarding the PJM, some of the stuff that's going on with that and impact on BPA. I'm going to ask Jenna Pat to come up and address that question, because that's a little bit different than what the state legislature is thinking about or working on the large load. So,
good morning, Commissioners. Jenna Peth, Federal Affairs Specialist. So just to address your question on PJM, that was a very specific situation. We're seeing obviously rising power costs across the country, but PJM has very specific supply issues and infrastructure issues. And so what happened there is there was a bipartisan group of governors and tech companies that approached the White House, and they had this idea for an emergency auction to hopefully bring more power online and have those tech companies pay for that those power costs directly and keep a price cap for residential customers. And so it was really a variety of stakeholders coming together there. And obviously in the Northwest here, we're in a different position, both because we're not seeing a widespread call from our governors on that particular issue, and we're not in an organized RTO, ISO, et cetera. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, it makes distinctly different.
Yeah, but it is something certainly that we're watching, and it's notable that the Dewey secretary was very involved in that effort, and of course he oversees BPA, so it's certainly something that we're watching. Thank you
Jenna.
You know, John, there's certainly a lot more public conversation about large loads and concerns. I think there's a Seattle Times article recently. I'm wondering, commissioners, if it would be when it's appropriate to get a briefing on what Bonneville, how Bonneville handles it, how we would handle a big single large load moving in for our area.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great idea, actually.
I agree, because we have been inundated like some parts of the country, but I also thought that staff was working on ahead of time.
Yes.
So if they knock on our door,
yeah,
we'll have practices and procedures in place.
Yep. And so the timing is really pretty, yeah, pretty prime for us to have a presentation to all and keep you informed on what's going on. We haven't been inundated, both us or really regionally, quite as much as others. I mean, our east side utility partners have certainly had been impacted. But yeah, I think it's a great idea, because it is obviously an ongoing concern, and it's something that is already a little bit political, but could grow even more so, given all the impact or the influence from some of the major corporations that are pushing on this, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, I think it's a great idea.
I always get a feeling in the pit of my stomach when the reason I'd ask about with the state too was they try to make one size fits all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we that's within our authority for Snohomish County PUD. So
yep. Yeah.
Some of the things that I don't know how it would work.
Yeah. Oh, great point. Great question.
And I think it's a challenge for the public. Mm-hmm. Because the public is getting more inundated the last few years with news stories about utilities, about electric prices going up around the nation, right? And every time I read one, my spouse says, "You read that article?" I said, "Yes, but it's not specific, right? It's in general." And so I think customers ask questions,
yeah,
and that's one of the questions. Are we going to run out of electricity? So lights go out because someone's got too many electric cars plugged in, right? Right? It's all kinds of those.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Commissioner,
yeah,
did you support?
Yes, I support, but also I would like to add something, because I have conversations, customers reach out, and also I saw an article regarding data centers, and it's one data center. Last week I saw the article, very interesting. It is in Eastern Washington that Microsoft tried to put the data center over there, and the town, the community members, they don't want to, because they want to utilize more water and things like that. So on one hand, it's assumption, because we're going to reutilize the water for something like that. But It is something that people start to be worried. So if it's something that we can talk about it, be proactive, because on one hand, people say, okay, are you going to take out for us all the water that we are going to need for agriculture or things like that, rather than utilize. So as how is going to be working this that we cannot stop, but we need to see how it's going to be developed that. So
Great point. I mean, it's certainly an electricity issue, but it is also a water issue. Yeah,
yes.
great point.
And it doesn't do much. It doesn't bring any jobs. I mean, I know we have Tampa, but
Yeah,
they're run by two people.
and that's a little bit of the economic development question. So yeah, lots of different things to talk about regarding large loads.
Thank
So I
you for
think it's a great
bringing that
idea. Yeah, appreciate that. So that's the completes the presentations for this morning.
Well, another quick study session. You have a report for us this morning.
I do a couple items to share. One, we had our annual safety breakfast last week. A lot of energy. That's always the time where we take a look back, reflect on where we've been from a safety perspective, improvements and things that we need to continue to work on, and then look forward into this year and then even beyond, and where do we have the opportunities. And one of the things that we focused on, we certainly aren't going to take our eye off the ball regarding physical safety or incident and injury prevention. That's still top of mind and a significant part of the safety culture we're building. But we want to ramp up the focus on psychological safety, safety where or creating an environment where people feel comfortable. It could be the brand new employee, right? But they're comfortable with stop work authority or chiming in, asking questions, and feel enabled and empowered to engage and ask questions if something doesn't feel right, doesn't look right. And just the overall benefit of folks feeling that they're engaged, that they are valued, they're welcomed. That causes morale to go up, and there is data shows there's a direct correlation to the higher morale is, the better the culture is, the less injuries there are. People are cut in, they're dialed in, they're focused on injury prevention, they're focused on following safety procedures, wearing their PPE, all those things. So we want to ramp that focus up and make sure that as a collective, the whole health, safety, and well-being of everybody is top of mind. Also, from a community engagement, our group gave a presentation on storm and outage preparation to the Stille Valley Chamber of Commerce on January 13th. We're getting more and more requests like that, which we think is fantastic, helps educate the public, but also engages with businesses and others to help them think or be prepared around storm preparation. We had our first team talks last week. Again, a lot of good energy. We celebrated the water 80th anniversary this year, which is super exciting, and also celebrated and acknowledged that the water department should have on Saturday completed all of their AMI meter installs. And it's 6 months ahead of schedule and under budget, both. So just a huge congratulations and kudos to the water crew. But again, great conversation, lots of good things shared during team talks. I wanted to mention Brenda White, John Hoffman, and I had lunch with Ray Stephenson from the Economic Alliance for Snohomish County, just continuing to build that partnership and make sure we're doing all the things that we can do with Ray and their team to continue to enhance not just attraction and retention of businesses, but just the overall goodwill that we can continue to build with our business partners across the county. And then just last, going to mention travel starts up a little bit, or travel starts up this weekend with the LPBC CEO meeting. And travel is pretty intense in February with board and executive committee meetings, but it is not as intense as the end of last year. So just wanted to put that on your radar.
For sure.
Good. Any questions, concerns?
I was able to attend that Stille Valley Chamber of Commerce.
Good.
And staff did a phenomenal job. They got some easy questions. They got some real hard questions.
Make a presentation.
Yeah, it's a
Who
great
did?
Kelly Stickney did.
Oh.
And then Brett Smith, I think, was there also, which is really helpful because half the downtown was without power, I think, for more than 24 hours. The grocery store lost a lot of food. And so after having explained Snow Smart and how we'd be able to switch, the question was, well, how come that other half of town? And the answer was that a tree fell on the device that switches the power.
Yeah.
So anyway, but it was just very, very well received. And I think more people understand about how we respond to storms. It was nice having the operations and the communication staff there.
Yeah, that's a great example. I appreciate you saying that. Where, in this case, Brett, the office manager up there is engaged in these conversations.
Yeah.
And good exposure for him, and good
Yeah.
exposure for us. And again, building that relationship with the community.
Yep. Turns out he's a local. He went to high school in the very building we met him.
Yep.
You went to high school?
Yeah, we meet in the Performing Arts Center at
Yeah.
Arlington High School, and he had attended that high school.
Who's he?
Brett.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry. David.
We have a comment.
Oh.
Good morning, Brenda White, Local Government Relations. I thought I'd tag on to this conversation. This is a really good one. The Engagement Council, is hard at work with outreach on storm presentations. It just so happens that Mayor Don Vanney and two council members reached out to us in the post-presentation. So now we're in conversation with doing some outreach at some of the senior living centers. They've been asking questions about how to prepare for storms. And it just so happens that same group that will do the presentation, we were planning on going out and presenting on just assistance, financial assistance for their bills. So yeah, it's really working.
Great.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Are you planning to present this also in different chamber of commerce, local?
Yes. Okay. Several chambers so far this has been presented, with a few more to go.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brenda. Well, that's it.
All right. Next, move item five, items of individual consideration. 5A, consideration of a resolution to ratify amendment number one of the WSPP Agreement Schedule B confirmation between the district and Citadel Energy Marketing LLC for the district's output share of the White Creek Wind Project. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Harrison Mars will be able to answer any questions regarding this. Are there any comments from the public regarding the resolution? Please raise your hand. No hands raised. Commissioners, do you have any questions or comments?
I have none.
Then, well, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed unanimously. Next is 5B, consideration of resolution authorizing the CEO General Manager or his designee to execute multiple revised exhibits to the district's 1996 point-to-point transmission service agreement with the Bonneville Power Administration. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
And Kyle is available to answer any questions regarding the resolution. Are there any comments from the public regarding the resolution? Raise your hand. Okay. Is there any questions or comments?
I have none.
I have none.
I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Next is item six, Commission Business 6A, Commission Reports. Are there any reports, Commission?
I have no reports.
I have no reports.
I was going to talk about the chamber meeting, but I already did that. So we'll move on to 6B, our Commissioner Events Calendar. See if there's any changes to the events calendar.
Busy, busy.
I do, I think I am scheduled to go to the PPC fuel meeting on January 28th.
Correct.
And I'm planning to go to PPC and Peanut.
I'm planning to attend that online.
Okay, thank you.
I'll be online as well. And Commissioner Loving and Commissioner Crosby, you're both doing the legislative rally in DC, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, this goes all the way through the year, so I'll just. Okay. Next is item 7, our governance planning calendar. Are there any changes to governance planning calendar? Oh, we were going to talk about, yeah, it's not on the agenda, so okay. So we turned in some thoughts about a workshop. Is there a discussion about whether we want to have a workshop, what we want to discuss?
I had no input. That wasn't because I'm not interested.
Right.
But I did see some very specific themes come out from what you submitted and what Commissioner Crosby submitted. As long as we can stay focused in those areas and not allow ourselves to drift. Because I think there's opportunity for some very good discussion dialogue in those areas.
Right. I'll work with Allison and we'll work on finding the date. Thank you, Allison. Next, our governance planning calendar, 7A. We just added something to talk about large single loads. You scheduled. Any other changes?
To be scheduled, and I'm not asking it to be prioritized in any way, but I was very pleased to see a facilities comprehensive plan is on the list. I think it's been here for years.
Yep.
So I'm very pleased to receive that.
Any other? Well, our short meeting is now 9:43 and the board will recess into executive session to discuss the performance of a public employee under the terms set forth in the Open Public Meeting Act, Public Meetings Act. It is anticipated the executive session will last approximately 60 minutes. We'll conclude at 10:43. The regular meeting will adjourn upon the conclusion of the executive session. It is now 10:46, and the executive session will be extended for approximately 30 more minutes and will conclude at 11:16. It is now 11:16 a.m., and our regular meeting is adjourned.